This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
With a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from Tantalk Radio Network studio here in glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. Oh, wow, do I have a guest today. I am so excited to welcome back to Joy on Paper. He's been here many times, and I just love it all the time. John Gilstrap, I am so happy to have you back here on Joy on Paper today.
Only half as happy as I am to be here.
Oh, wow. Another release date. Another,
you know. Yes. The gift that keeps on giving.
That's it. It's, you know, I'm part now of your history because you come on the program, I think, almost every release date. And, you know, tomorrow is an anniversary, isn't it, of a release date? July 30th. I think that was your first book, wasn't it?
Well, tomorrow is June 30th.
Oh, June 30th. It's yes.
But
it could be July 30th. In my mind is gone. July 30th. Okay, I'm glad you remember. Can you believe it, though? July 30th? That was 25
years ago.
My first book. My goodness, and all this time, and you keep writing, and you keep getting better. And what I always say about your characters, why this Jonathan Graves series is so good, and we are now up to book 13 and going strong, because you created from day one, from the first book, you created a group of people that we like. And that's really important. These are all of your characters are people we want over at Thanksgiving, if we ever have Thanksgiving again, you know.
Well, you want them over as long as they're your friend.
Oh, definitely. You got to be on the right side of those characters.
So, you know, I think for me, fiction is all about characters. You know, it's interesting people doing interesting things in interesting ways. And, you know, I just like all of the characters in my books are, I guess, I know somebody who's like all of them. I mean, nobody is a recreation of somebody that I know, but they're bits and pieces of folks. And a lot of Jonathan and Boxers and his team, the hostage rescue guys, are composites of people I've known, cops I've known, firefighters I've known, and crazy guys down the street. And one particularly wild dorm neighbor when I was in college. So, you know, they're composites of everybody. But, you know, when you spend this much time, it takes a year, give or take, to write a book. And I want to play with imaginary friends I like to hang out with.
Well, you've created wonderful characters, and we get to know them so well. And I was really thrilled with this new book because we are concentrating a little bit on Roman. And,
yes.
And so we've sort of grown along with him, and one of the first characters that I really liked of all of your characters is Venice. The minute I read about her, I just got a kick out of her.
Well, she is kind of the moral compass of the book. She's also a wicked talented computer hacker and a frustrated mom of a 13-year-old, and she supports incursions into other countries where things blow up. She has a very complicated life.
Yeah, and things, well, things do blow up. You know, as a former firefighter, and you are expert at blowing things up, and so we can always look forward to that. And one of the things, of course, I love about your books, you are so good on writing the military side and about weapons, because as somebody who slept with a Uzi under my bed for 40 years, I really appreciate an author who writes well about weapons and knows their weapons. And I think that's one of the features of why your book really stand out from so many other thrillers, because you know what you're writing about.
Well, I thank you. In fact, Jonathan and his team, there's never been a weapon I've written about in the book that I have not physically handled or fired.
Ah, that's good. If I was writing a series like that, it's exactly. That's the perk, isn't it?
It is. It certainly makes research enjoyable.
Yeah, you go to somebody. You go to any armament that you say, hey, give me a. I want to try this out. It might be in my book.
Exactly. So you get to shoot a lot of other people's ammunition. It's even better.
Oh, it's fantastic. It's fantastic. And, of course, that's what makes it so realistic. You know, all of your scenes, when you bring out the weapons, we believe it.
Well, it's an interesting, this is a balance I have to reach, that I'm an unabashed gun guy. I always have been. I enjoy the mechanics of it, and I like going to the range and all that. But a lot of people don't. Thriller readers are not necessarily all gun folk. So I work really hard to reach a balance between sort of servicing the readers who enjoy the detail, but then not dipping into what I call gun porn, which goes into lands and grooves and twists,
yeah,
all that kind of stuff. That's fascinating to me, but would put everybody else to sleep.
But it's seamless. You bring it in, it's sort of seamless. It just flows along with the story. Just enough to make all of us who are enthusiasts really enjoy it. And but of course, it always does come down with any series, characters. Just having the characters that we care about, that we embrace and want to know more about. So tell us about this story. The new book, is really Stealth Attack. I thought, the minute I started reading it, and I started realizing it's going to be about have Roman in it, because we've gotten to know him and understand his relationship with Jonathan, which is very close. And explain a little bit about Roman for the people who might just be coming to this, because the wonderful thing about your books too is people can start with book 13 and they can go back and pick up any book along the way and enjoy the story just as much.
Well, thank you. I work hard at making that possible. Roman Alexander is, let me start even before that. Jonathan Grave, who's the main character of the series, was born Jonathan Gravenow. And he was the son of a career criminal who got very, very wealthy through his criminality. The Jonathan's mother died when Jonathan was very young. And Florence Alexander, who goes by Mama Alexander, became sort of his caretaker. And she was also the chief servant, sort of old school South servant in the house. And Mama's daughter, Venice, is what she was named. And in a fit of adolescent angst, Venice decided that she would become Venice, and that stuck. And Roman Alexander is Venice's son. So Jonathan has known Venice forever. When Jonathan's father went to prison, Jonathan inherited all of that, and he didn't want it. He didn't want ill-gotten gain. It's hard to get rid of $1 billion, right? So he ended up deeding the childhood mansion to St. Kate's Catholic Church to start a place called Resurrection House, which is the residential home for children of incarcerated parents. And he insisted that Venice and Mama and Roman be able to live in that mansion while Jonathan moved to another location in Fisherman's Cove where he would live and have his office. So Roman has been a part of Jonathan's life forever, not as a surrogate father so much as, an inspiration. He's like a big brother kind of guy. So in the story, Roman, who's 13, actually Roman has been 13 since 2009. People don't age in my book.
Yeah, I was going to mention that.
So Roman goes on a school trip, a newspaper getaway kind of thing for his school, down to El Paso, Texas. And Jonathan has had his nemesis. You know, some authors have their nemesis being the Middle Eastern terrorists, some are the Russians and all this, and I hit pretty hard on the cartels because this was all before modern politics, by the way. These things are written a year in advance. So, Roman and his girlfriend, Sierra Kelly, are at a kind of a city beach. It's a water park, really. And they end up being taken prisoner, and Jonathan, and they disappear. They just go away. And Jonathan assumes that this is all in retaliation for him having issues with the cartels, who are very, very active all along the border. They've been for many, many, many years. They've been very active along the border. So he goes on a rescue mission. So that's kind of he wants to get Roman back. He learns that Roman's been taken down to Mexico, and it's really, really, really a bad mistake to come after what Jonathan considers his family.
it's a very bad mistake. I wouldn't. Scorpion is not somebody you want to go up against.
No, and Boxers in particular. Oh. His buddy, his behemoth buddy, is also somebody not to cross.
Yeah, I think it's a bad mistake, and we are going to have fun throughout the book as things develop. And what I love is, you know, it is partly, I think I've always had this thing for Venice. I just liked her, and I like that the way you did it. Florence, Venice, Roman. I like that the way your mind worked when you were picking names, because that's part of when you're an author. It's important, the names that you pick in the end.
You're the only person I've ever talked to. I'm not. This is absolutely God. This is true. That has ever picked up the similarity of the Italian city names.
Uh-huh.
Who's been there? But you're the first one who has. Well, the first one who has voiced it.
Well, know, I don't know. I think it's what happens when you have those names in the back. Subconsciously, people recognize it, and I think that's why there's a familiarity with them. You connect in your mind. You connect the names, and I love it. I thought that was very clever. I didn't know if you actually thought it out long in advance, but I maybe because you love Italy. But I think it's a great, really something that sticks in the mind, and that's what we're trying to do with when you're writing a book. You want people to remember your characters.
Well, yeah, and it's also interesting. I know exactly why that happened. Why the names are that way. I've never written about it because there's never been an occasion to. But one of the great things about writing a long-running series like this is that there's always an opportunity for a new subplot or a new tidbit to drop to keep things interesting. That one's never really come up yet, but there's a very definite reason in my mind.
Well, good. I'm glad. I caught it. And I mentioned it because I thought it, I've been, you know, I read so many books. I read so many books now. And I love when the characters stay in my mind, and long time after, you know, I've read them, I can still recollect them. And for example, like Wolverine is another name that you mention. Talk about Wolverine. This is also a character.
Well, Wolverine's real name is Irene Rivers, and she is the director of the FBI. And she was actually first, Irene Rivers, not as Wolverine, but Irene Rivers was originally introduced in my second book in 1998 as an FBI agent. And as I was writing the first book in the Grave series, I needed to have an FBI director, and I thought, oh, wow, okay. I already have an FBI agent, so I promoted her. And Wolverine is her radio handle. That's what Jonathan calls her. And for the rationale behind that, and again, all these books I think stand alone pretty well, but if anybody wants to know why Wolverine is named Wolverine, you need to go read Soft Targets, because it's all explained in there. And so Jonathan has known Irene Rivers since forever, you know, since he was still in the Army and she was just an FBI agent, a special agent. And they've had this relationship that's kind of, she asks him to do things that governments can't do, and because she does that, they have this weird symbiotic relationship where everybody works outside the law. in the books. You know, that's one of the things I like about it, about writing them. Everybody's doing the right thing. They're on the side of the angels, as they like to say. But they always break the law, and they can do it with impunity, and they can speak freely with each other because they've all got all this information on each other, so therefore nobody's going to rat each other out.
Well, you write it beautifully with all of the connections. I think, you know, it's wonderful how an author, and as you said, you're sort of putting these little seeds along the way. They might pay off at some point where you'll just be able to say, let this seed bloom into a storyline, like you did with Irene, taking her from being a simple agent, you know, to the director and carrying it through. And I think that's why the books are so enjoyable.
Well, it's certainly why they're fun to write, and I'm glad that they're fun to read. It's funny, the author, you spend so much time hammering out these words, and then you do the copy edits, and then you do, you know, on and on and on. I am the last person to judge whether or not something's good anymore, right, of my own. So it's always nice to hear when it resonates with other people that, yes, I did it.
and you do it. Do you think do you take time now to think about, well, is this a good metaphor? Is this a good, do you work like that? Do you go back over your work and say, where can I sort of punch it up?
Well, you know, the first drafts always suck, but I don't do whole drafts. I start every day rewriting what I wrote yesterday. So by the time I get to the end of a book, it's pretty clean. So those final passes are, is it interesting? Does it sag anywhere? Does that paragraph really need to exist? Don't they already know that? So I can cut that out. So there's a lot of cleanup process, but no, I don't sweat. I think maybe I should, but whether or not this is the appropriate metaphor, or simile, quite honestly, they confuse me, the differences between them. what I try to do is create, I tell the story as I hear it in my head, and as long as I think it flows and it's true to itself and the characters are true to themselves, I think it's there. I think that's, and then it's for others to judge.
Well, you know, for me, as somebody who used to write scripts, when I read a book and I see it as a movie in my head, I know it's a good book because I almost forget it's a book and I'm living the book. And with you, that always happens, partly because of the characters and then, of course, the action, which I love. But actually, you're like a 3D movie. You know, sometimes I read a book and it's a movie. You know, it's fine. But with you, it's a 3D movie because things sort of pop out there. And I'm trying to think. There's one part, I can't remember which book it was in, where you wrote about why bad guys like jungles. Which book was that? That was a good line there about why bad guys like jungles. It's a psychosis.
Yes, it's. I believe that's in Final Target.
Yeah, I think so. And I thought I've after that when I'm reading a book and somebody has a jungle scene, I think yeah, it's a psychosis. It's a psychosis. These bad guys are there. You know, that's something like that. I mean, did you realize when you wrote that that's really clever? Do you like stop to yourself and say, "Oh, you know, that's really clever. I just wrote a really clever line."
Whenever I think it's really clever, it probably needs to come out. But that kind of just flows right on out. Boxers is Jonathan's right hand man, and he's pushing 7 feet tall, and bends bends the needle on scales. So he's a really, really big guy, and he's the one with the really dry, sardonic sense of humor that will say, I think, really hysterical things. but they just occur. No, it's not a hunt that I do.
It just
I know
comes.
This guy. I know all of these characters so well at this point.
Well, they are wonderful, and the new book, I think, I can't say they get better and better because sometimes I can go back to some of the other books and I say, well, this is really great. So, you know, it's just so wonderful the way that you're writing. And you're not going to BouchaCon this year, are you?
I am not.
No. Okay, I talked, you know, it was Larry Block's birthday last week on the 24th.
Oh.
And he was here for the entire hour for his birthday. And so we were talking about, you know, of course, all of his work and about how much we enjoy going to BouchaCon. We were both, you know, in Dallas. And of course, you were here at the Vinoy where you met my bear, Pekka. And I still have that picture up all the time. It's a shame that we can't all meet in BouchaCon again this year.
Well, I would go to BoucherCon. I got to tell you, New Orleans in August is hard to contemplate.
Yeah.
But we're also in the process. My wife and I are building our dream home in the woods of West Virginia.
Oh.
We just sold this house, and we got to move to an apartment in between, and So it's going to be a confusing 8 to 10 weeks between now and when we're out of here.
Well, I always think when I... Remember, you know, in Dallas, there were, of course, a lot of panels. You go to all these panels. But of all of the panels that I went to, yours really stuck out because you moderated that panel. And so often, you know, it's wonderful to have a bunch of writers up at the front of the room talking. But if there's no moderation, you know, somebody to moderate is somebody to sort of lead it. It sometimes sort of drifts off into nothingness, but you had a terrific panel in Dallas.
I've been to so many of these things, I forget which panel that was, and I've moderated a few of them. I think the trick to any panel, quite honestly, is to talk to the panelists beforehand, if you can, as the moderator. And for people who are listening to this, not sure how this works, it's at all these writers' conferences. Writers are assigned panels. You get together, and the topic will be, I don't know, characters or violence in fiction or, you know, whatever the topic is. And then the organizers appoint the attendees to be up there, and there's a moderator. And what so often happens is you have folks who have been doing this for a very long time and do very good panel. You know, they got shtick, and they're very entertaining. And then you got the new writer who's just got his first book out or her first book out and very shy and doesn't get a chance to say much, and it's very uncomfortable. So the role of the moderator is to make sure that everybody gets an opportunity to shine and that everybody gets to tell the story they want to tell, but they have to realize that it's only a 50-minute panel and there's six people up there.
Yeah. Well, you do it the best. I'm telling you right now, you do it the best because you really did bring out each of the panelists, had their time, and sort of the light was shining on them, and the glow from you, because you are now like you are getting really, you know, very, very as a writing personality, very strong and very powerful. Now you've been translated into over 20 languages, I think. You're doing great.
Why? Thank you. I like to think so.
Yeah.
You can always do better.
Yeah.
But,
well, I don't know.
I really can't complain. The fact that I've been able to do this for 23 books over 25 years and four screenplays in the middle in there sometime, and all, if you had asked me when I was 10 years old, maybe 12 years old, what I wanted to do for a living, I would have told you that I wanted to be a writer. So there you go.
You made it. Well, John Gilstrap, and I must mention also Crimson Phoenix, because that's your other series. And I love that series. And the new book, you know, in the Jonathan Graves series is, of course,
Stealth Attack,
and it is available wherever books are sold. I hope there are a lot of bookstores open and that they have it right there at the front of the store. But it's also available online everywhere. And what's your website, Jonathan?
www.johngilstrap.com.
John, did I call you Jonathan? I called you Jonathan.
Yeah,
well, you know, in my head, well, in your head, probably. Jonathan.
I am not Jonathan.
Jonathan
is what I wish I might have been one time if I had a full head of hair about 6 inches taller.
Yeah, well, that's fun. Well, John Gilstrap, what a Jonathan. John Gilstrap. Yes, that's his website, and he is a creator of Jonathan Graves. And just a wonderful, wonderful series, and the new book is fantastic. A great read. a 3D movie in your head. That's all you need to know. Get this book and Stealth Attack. Boy, it's a page turner. And John, thank you so much for being on Joy on Paper again today. And I'll have you back. I know you'll come out with another book soon, right?
I will indeed. But next March, I think, is the next one, and then another one in June.
Okay, in March, is it going to be another?
That'll be Blue Fire, which is the sequel to Crimson Phoenix.
Oh, great. I'm looking forward to that. Okay, well, have fun building your house. I know how much fun it is to build a house. I helped build a house once and built the garage almost by myself. So it's lots of fun. And enjoy yourself over there in a lovely, lovely area of the country.
Thank you very much. And it's always a pleasure. It's such fun talking to you.
Okay. John Gilstrap, thank you for being on Joy on Paper. Bye-bye now. Okay. Let's go to commercial, and then I'll be back with another author in a little while.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more rewarding careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at larsonpatentlaw.com.
Have you ever faced disaster? The Red Cross is always there for you. The Red Cross responds to a call for help every 8 seconds. They have never turned anyone down. Now they need your financial support so that they can be ready to help you when the need arises. Donate online at redcross.org. Thank you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
With a Z, and I am back with my next guest and the next book, which is when I saw the name of this book, I just said, I'm going to fall in love with this book. I know it. It's called Death of an Italian Chef, and it's a Haley Powell mystery. It's number 14 in this fantastic series, and Hi, who am I talking to? Lee Hollis. I'm not talking to Lee. Huh?
Yes, Lee Hollis, but we're a brother and sister team, so you've got one half of us.
Okay, well.
That's the Hollis.
So you're who do I, what do I call you? I always get so confused when I have somebody like this with a name that I don't know what to call you. What do you want to be called? I mean, we want everybody to know the name Lee Hollis, because that's the name.
Lee Hollis, absolutely.
So do I call you Lee Hollis?
You can call me Rick.
I can call you Rick, because that's your name. But they have to look for Lee Hollis, so it was a decision that you and your sister made to make this combined name to write this wonderful series. And as I said, the minute Kensington sent me this book, they send me a whole box of books, and I, you know, plowing through them, which ones do I want to read? Which, and I saw Death of an Italian Chef, and I just had to read that one. First of all, the cover is beautiful, but I expect that from Kensington. When I get a box of books from Kensington, I know the covers are going to be gorgeous. But that title, well, because I I spent a great deal of my childhood, I mean, I'm talking from the time I was 7 years old and I could stand on a stool. I was working in an Italian restaurant in the kitchen, and I was stirring the spaghetti sauce and standing on a stool. So I know Italian cooks, and I know, and Gino was my guy, and I was raised there. Mostly I washed dishes, actually. I washed a lot of dishes, but every once in a while he'd give me the treat of standing on a stool and stirring the spaghetti sauce. So tell me about this wonderful book.
Well, this is the 14th in the series, and Haley Powell is a character that's loosely based on my sister. She does write a cooking column, but just doesn't solve murders. The name Lee Hollis came out of, it's our middle names, and we didn't want two names on the book, so we had her middle name Lee and my middle name Hollis, and it became Lee Hollis. And in this Haley Powell is just, she's a single mom, she's raising her kids in our hometown of Bar Harbor, where we actually grew up. We grew up in Bar Harbor, Maine. And it's about her life and her friends. And in this particular book, she is reviewing a new Italian restaurant in town, and tells the owner that she thinks her spaghetti carbonara tastes better. So they have a taste off, and there's a murder, and there's lots of recipes. I write the actual mysteries, and my sister writes the columns and recipes that are interspersed throughout the book.
And they are so good. I can tell you right now, I'm having spaghetti for dinner tonight.
Me too.
Yeah, I have to. And as a matter of fact, when I first got the book and read it, I had lasagna. So it puts you in the mood, I tell you. And this is a particularly good one. There's lots of little surprises in here. It's not an easy, these cozy mysteries are so much fun, and I love Kensington, for all of their cozy mysteries. But sometimes I get who done it really early. But boy, this one was, there's a lot of twists and turns and lots of surprises. You must have a lot of fun writing these.
Yes, we love doing these books, and I come out of television, so I was always about, you got to have the surprise ending, you got to have the outline, everything fully figured out as you're writing it, and so I try to make it my mission with each book to really surprise the reader with a couple of twists at the end. That's always the challenge of the book, but it's always the most fun about writing the book. Is like, who can it be that no one's going to ever suspect?
Exactly. And, of course, with your television experience, because this is one of the things, I wrote scripts. And so you really have to learn to paint the picture. And it has to be sort of crisp and smart and be able to describe something so quickly and yet make sure that the reader sees it in their mind. And I saw this. I mean, from the opening scene in the restaurant, right through the book, I could see these scenes in my head, and I loved it.
Oh, that's great. Oh, that's nice to hear.
Well, you learn to be, really paint the picture. And that's the goal when you're writing a book. If the reader walks away and says, wasn't I in that restaurant? I think I was there. So it makes you feel good, huh?
Yeah, absolutely. And I always love, because the part I don't do are the recipes. So I always look forward to the recipes because I can actually smell the food when I'm reading my sister's recipes. I can actually taste it in my head because I'm a terrible cook. But she's a great cook. That's what I love. When she paints the pictures, she just gives those ingredients and how to do it. I can just picture making that dish, even though I just don't have the skills to do it myself. But
so, do you write the book first, and then she comes out with the recipes, or she does the recipes, and you just work around that?
The funny thing is, we usually come up with a title first, and then because every title in the series is about a certain food, you know. So we've done Death of a Bacon Heiress. You know, we've done Death of a Blueberry Tart with all blueberry recipes. We did a Halloween one called Death of a Wicked Witch, which was a sandwich truck, you know. So it was all sandwiches. And so, yeah, but we write in tandem. Like, we'll talk out the story, and I'll start writing the book. And then she waits until she gets to the point in the book where the column goes, and then she'll write behind me and then finish up at the end with the last column. But all the recipes are hers, and the stories, a lot of them are true from our childhood. We like to incorporate, you know, actual things that happened to us in those. She remembers, you know, Christmas is past and all whatever the book happens to be.
Oh, and obviously some interesting characters in your life, because... Yeah. Yeah, you've peopled this series with some interesting characters. Tell us about them.
Well, you know, her two best friends in the book are these women, two women, Mona and Liddy. And Liddy is a very glamorous real estate agent. And Mona's kind of this down-to-earth lobster woman with her own seafood shop. And they're based on real people. They're, like, based on friends that my sister grew up with. And the brother is kind of me, you know. You know, except I don't own a bar called Drink Like a Fish.
You only drink like a fish. So
sadly, that's true, Patsy. and then even the sheriff, the police chief is kind of based on someone we know who's Brazilian, you know. And so a lot of the regular characters are based on people that we. That we know in Bar Harbor. And it's fun for them because everybody knows when they read the book.
Well, you must have great book signings when you guys get together.
Yeah. That's our favorite place to go is home to just sign books because, we usually get a lot of people out.
Well, I'm sure. I think it's always wonderful when you've placed a story in a certain place, and then you can go back there. It's real place, and I think people enjoy that. There's an author, Phil Vega, who's been on the program, and he wrote a book called Last Exit to Montauk. And now what people are doing is they're going to Montauk, and they're looking for the Montauk sign or the places that he has in the story, and they're holding up the book and sending it to him, and he's putting it on Facebook, which is really nice.
Oh, that's amazing. That's so much fun. Yeah.
Yeah, so that's what you should do with your whole town. Well, you can have the whole town with 14 books now. You can line them up and say, everybody, hold a book here. Yeah.
I always try to use local. I mean, obviously, you know, where people are murdered, these terrible things happen in the book. I try not to do them in real places. I don't want to hurt anyone's business. You know? But so we do have a mix of places we make up, but then there are a lot of places that we talk about in the book that they go for breakfast at Jordan's restaurant in Bar Harbor, Maine, with it famous for their blueberry pancakes. And my great grandfather used to own it because my mother's maiden name is Jordan. And so, you know, I always have that in the book. So she's always going over clues at Jordan's restaurant over blueberry pancakes, you know. And so I try to put in a lot of the local flavor that's actual, you know, you can go to Bar Harbor and you can see all these places.
Well, that's great. Let's encourage everybody. Go to Maine and go to Jordan's and stand in front of it and take your picture holding the book. And next thing you know, you'll be on Lee Hollis's Facebook page, right?
Absolutely.
So it's, of course, nowadays with the pandemic-y thing, you can't do a lot of book tours and stuff. But how are you working now with your publicity and all of this marketing?
You know, Patsy, I have to say that during the pandemic, I was able to connect with so many more fans and readers than before because of the virtual events that we were able to do where more people could attend from their homes. They didn't have to get in the car and go on, you know. And so I felt like in the last year and a half that we've really connected with a lot of readers. And don't get me wrong, I look forward to getting back out there and going to VoucherCon and all these, you know, all these great events that I miss going to. But it was very nice to see, you know, be on a Zoom call and see like 40 readers in their faces and actually get to connect with them on a more personal level too, you know. And so it actually worked out, even though I'm thrilled that, you know, we're moving out of this now. So
well, of course, being with you know, Kensington, they do so much for their authors.
Oh yeah, they are great. I've been, you know, I wrote my first book in 2003. It came out with, and I've been with Kensington ever since. So I've never gone anywhere else.
I love the way that they promote their authors and all of the events that they, and really during this pandemic-y time, they've created for their authors. And I have many, many Kensington authors on my program. One because so often, you know, as I said, I get a lot of books. I get boxes of books now. And when I see a nice cover, I can't help it. And then when, of course, if it has the word Italian or coffee in it.
oh, that's good to know. We'll have to do a coffee one next.
Oh, I will tell. I take those books immediately. So I've had a lot of really lots of fun with all of the Kensington authors, and actually my very first in studio guest. And if you are ever in the Tampa Bay area, you have to come here to the studio. My very first in-studio guest was Carol J. Perry, and she, of course, is a Kensington author. And she writes the Witch City Mysteries, which are set in Salem. And again, it's very clever. I think it's very nice to set the books in a real place where people can really go.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
It just enhances.
Actually, my first trip after the after I got vaccinated was I flew to Florida. My mother lives in Sebastian. So Tampa's not that far.
Okay. Well, come down and see your mom again and swing over here to the Tampa Bay area. We'd love to have you in the studio. It would be just so much fun. Well, actually, bring your sister and have her bring a bunch of blueberry muffins. And, you know, you have to come prepared if you come into the studio.
Absolutely.
But, Absolutely. So she must have so much fun, too, coming out with these recipes and doing the research.
She certainly loves doing the research and kitchen testing them, because we're a family of eaters, so it actually works out great.
Well, of course, if you've been doing it since it was your great grandfather who started doing it.
Great grandfather, yeah, he had a couple businesses, but he owned this little restaurant in town with it that made blueberry pancakes famous in Bar Harbor. But the one we're working on now, the next book in the series, is Death of an Ice Cream Scooper. So she's getting to incorporate all her ice cream fantasies.
Oh, boy, oh, boy, oh, boy. Yeah, that, I, one of the fun things I've always enjoyed is making homemade ice cream and all of the different, I homeschool my kids, so I had a whole bunch of homeschool kids around me all the time. I explained to some of the mothers one time, I said, homeschooling doesn't mean in my home. And they would drop their kids off and they'd say, well, you know, we're going to run, you know, have our nails done. We're going to run and have our hair done. We're running to the mall. And I somehow landed up with all the homeschool kids. And partly that was because I cooked a lot. I'm a great baker. And there was always, I devised a way to teach history to kids, and it is the simplest way in the world, and I'm recommending this to everybody. I made cookies, and then on the cookies, I would put a date, 1941, 1918, 1776, whatever. If the kids had to be able to tell me what happened on those dates, and if they couldn't, they couldn't eat the cookie. So all of my kids and all of their friends became really good at knowing dates, because that's how I taught history. And, you know, you have to be creative. with homeschool, you know, homeschooling. So food is a wonderful way, and I love, that's why I love this series. I think Haley's great. I'm so happy, you know, that she's happy with a nice husband, and
that wasn't the case in the beginning of the series.
Oh, I know, and that's why it's great the way you've developed the series and developed the characters, and I was sorry that the brother got this little problem in this book.
It was based on truth. I had a gallbladder issue several.
So it was. It was you. Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness. Well, you can even turn a gallbladder incident into a wonderful storyline. And you did it.
Actually, the only reason I went with that was because it was the only medical thing I've ever had to go through. So I thought, well, I might as well write from experience, right?
And you did it well. I really felt for you. I felt for you. Well, I think Death of an Italian Chef, the Haley Powell mystery, number 14 is terrific. We're looking forward to number 15 and Ice Cream. But you paint a wonderful picture, and you have a website where you want people to go to?
Yes, LeeHollisMysteries.com. You can read about this series, and you can read about the other two series that I do without my sister, called Poppy Harmon, and then the Maya and Sandra mystery. So I live in Palm Springs, so Poppy Harmon's set in Palm Springs.
Yeah, I know. I have to have you on now for Poppy Harmon, because I got one of those too in this. Kensington's really generous with their books, so they send me. Whenever I come home. I often come home after the studio, and because they send them to my house, so I look there and I see this big box in front of my door, and I know it's a Kensington, a treasure box. That's what I call them. They're
that's great.
They're terrific. Well, I am so happy that you were on today, Lee. I'll say Lee Hollis and Death of an Italian Chef. The books are available, I'm sure, in bookstores, but also, and Kensington always has wonderful displays in Barnes & Noble. And it's available online and at your website. So again, thank you so much for joining me today. Wonderful, wonderful series. And I'm going to have, now I have to have you back on, and then I can call you Rick, and then I can, I get confused. You shouldn't confuse me. So I didn't have my coffee. I need coffee. I didn't have my coffee today, and that is not a good thing. But I will have my spaghetti tonight, and I will be thinking about you and your sister and the wonderful job that you guys have done with this series, because you really have made a delicious series with wonderful, wonderful recipes.
So and thank you for having me. This is great. This is great fun.
Okay. Bye-bye now. Bye.
Bye.
Okay. What a guy. I like this. This is a fun series, I tell you. He's so sweet. And I do have his, and they sent me his other book. You know, I got confused. I said to one of the people at Kensington, I said, I want Lee Hollis on. And she said, which series? And I said, I want the one with the dead Italian chef. That's the one I want, because it is such a, it's a delicious book. You know, a book with recipes is always great, and I really like it. And so, anyway, Death of an Italian Chef. Oh boy, oh boy, oh boy. Do you know how many dishes, dirty dishes I washed? And I'll tell you something. If you're going to wash dirty dishes in an Italian restaurant, this is a learning experience. And I washed a lot of dishes, a lot of dishes. But I was often I was very efficient. The one thing is, my cousin and I washed dishes. And I did graduate faster than she did to the official stirring spaghetti sauce, because I was really good at that. And then I graduated, then eventually I helped with other things. And that's why ever since then I've been a great Italian chef. I make a crazy, wonderful lasagna. This is a learning experience. Again, one of the many jobs I did as a kid to earn money so that I could move from the Upper Peninsula of Michigan to England. Even at that age, I was already saving my money. By the time I was 11, I had a bank account, and I was saving my money so that I could move and live near where Jane Austen was born. So I started my first job when I was 7 years old, paper route, then went on to the dishwashing, then went on to spaghetti stir, and on, and eventually I had enough money. By the time I was 21, I flew to England, and I bought a house, a 400-year-old house in England near where Jane Austen was born. It all depends on determination. And it's funny, John Gilstrap knew that he was going to be an author when he was 10 years old. And when I talked to Lee Block last week, he was 15 years old when he decided that he was going to be an author in New York City, and he did it. And that is one of the wonderful things about all this world of books. There's so much to learn, so much to do, and so much joy that you can find in reading. And eventually, if you read well, after a while, you start noticing things and you start saying, yeah, maybe I could write. And you can. It's up to you. There are lots of things happening now in the sort of Zoom community where you can take classes online. It's not as much fun as going, to some of these events. And eventually, I hope a lot of the events will open up again. Particularly, I think writing seminars, the ones that they do out, where you're in a cabin and you're writing like crazy. And that's what Lawrence Block was talking about last week, how he went to a writing retreat. And those retreats are fantastic when you go for like a whole month and all you do is write like crazy. And so hopefully those will happen because, it's just so much fun. It's just fill your brain instead of watching reruns, instead of, sort of vegging out on television. Think about what you would like to see on television. And if you don't see it, then start writing it and just start writing because you can do it. And I want to thank again, I had two more emails from listeners who are writing their books, and I'm so happy because next week I'm going to start with Jim Lamb is going to give us some examples of some different literary ideas just to sort of pique your interest and get you thinking about writing and how you can become a writer. Because remember what I always tell you, one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper or to hear them spoken in an audible book, or if you're very, very lucky, to hear those magic words, lights, camera, action, and your book will be turned into a major motion picture, streaming video, or if you're very lucky, a series on the Hallmark Channel. You never know, and you won't know unless you start writing. By the way, I just love the new Bosch series. Whoa, I'm just crazy about it. Absolutely wonderful. Looking forward to the Jack Reacher series and Lee Child's baby coming to life on the streaming video. But that's going to come soon. And meanwhile, say something nice to someone, and I will say something nice to Big Ed in the control room. Thank you, Big Ed. You are just wonderful. And he saluted me, and I saluted him. And everybody have a wonderful, wonderful day. It is glorious weather here in Florida. Enjoy. Bye-bye now.
WTAN, Clearwater.
FM 106.1.
WDCF, Dade City.
FM 102.3.
WZHR, Zephyr Hills.
FM 104.3.
Listen.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Rocket Mortgage.
I'm Deborah Rodriguez.
You have to go to Surfside, Mr. President.
President Biden telling reporters outside the White House he'll visit the condo collapse in Surfside, Florida, Thursday. Still, just 11 bodies recovered. All have been identified. Dozens of others are still missing. Correspondent David Begno is in Surfside.
150 people are still missing under 12 stories of rubble and debris.
We're not lifting floor by floor. We're talking about pulverized concrete. We're talking about